Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, I think we can both agree that one of the more troubling things to shamble out of the 1970s was the possible Human Z, Oliver.
Oh, yeah. That very, very sad case of a chimpanzee.
Sweet animal.
Very sweet, cigar-smoking, upright-walking, bald, bald-ish chimp that people thought was very, like, eerily human-like. And some people even thought that he might have been the missing link.
Between humans and great apes and chimpanzees
Yes, we hear about the missing link all the time. And in the 1970s, before genetic testing, the people were just so unnerved by this little creature, Oliver, that they thought for sure that there wasn't some part of him that was human.
And they saw it in his face, right? They saw it in the way that he appeared to walk around on 2 feet.
Right.
And supposedly the smell as well. There are some accounts that say that he didn't smell like a chimpanzee should, that he smelled like a little bit like a man and a little bit like a chimp.
Yeah, well, here's the context. 1970s, a couple raises chimpanzees, uses them for entertainment purposes, meaning, you know, in commercials or parties or whatever. They get this one peculiar chimpanzee, Oliver. Uh-huh. Turns out that nobody really wants to use him in commercials because he is really unsettling, because he looks very human, and because he keeps walking upright, like, consistently. You see, chimps do this sometimes, but this particular chimpanzee was, you know, even though his hips were splayed out, he would still walk upright. People are like, that's kind of weird. And so they began to anecdotally say things like, oh, well, you know, the other chimps don't like Oliver because he must have a bad smell, or they don't recognize his smell. So we don't know for sure exactly what the deal was with Oliver.
But they felt weird about using him. They didn't think he looked like star chimp material. And maybe, just maybe, they found that he was a little too human.
That's the problem, that
it felt really weird to take this sort of human-looking animal and put it in a cage, take it out of the cage, make it run around for a commercial, and then reward it with a carrot and a cigar.
Well, especially if it sits down next to you and starts smoking a cigar and maybe even making a pass at you, because apparently this is something that he would do when he turned 16 and his hormones were raging, I guess. But he, in fact, was not a humanzee. As much as people wanted to believe or thought that he was. Later on, they did genetic testing on him. They found that he was, you know, 100% chimp. That doesn't mean that people still aren't fascinated by the idea that you could create half man, half ape.
Right. It is a troubling idea, as the title of this podcast suggests. You know, it's the idea that there is this bridge between us and the animal. It blurs the line between what it is to be human and what it is to be this other. And of course, this is something that we've explored in horror and science fiction many times in the past, especially at the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 20th century. You saw a number of very important stories that came around that really signified this. I mean, one as early as 1841, you had the murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe, which, you know, spoilers, it involves an orangutan with a straight razor stuffing girls into chimneys. And the idea that this ape is going around committing crimes against humans, so, you know, it's pretty troubling. But then it really kicks in a little later. Of course, you have The Island of Dr. Moreau, classic novel, 1896.
Stinky movie. Classic novel, stinky movie.
Which movie are you referring to?
Marlon Brando.
Yes, the 96 version, which you still have to admit is pretty fun because you have Marlon Brando in that whole getup, apparently acting with a headset. Like, barely acting, like reading lines that are fed
to him. Out of his gourd.
Right. And then he has the little, the whole idea of the mini-me originates with the little person that he had dressed up like him.
Yeah. It is unsettling. Yeah.
And then you had Ron Perlman running around as in an animal costume.
Oh,
you had,
about that.
Val Kilmer doing God knows what. And, it was kind of a disaster. But there was also a 1977 film version that had Burt Lancaster and Michael York. And that one was always a favorite of mine because it was like when I was a kid, I would watch like Grandpa Munster would host this like Saturday morning afternoon. You know, he was a daytime horror TV host, and he would host these awful movies that I would watch. And this was before Mystery Science Theater 3000. So, I would always check it out, and they would, you know, show stuff like Them with the giant ants, and I particularly remember being really into that 77 version of Dr. Moreau.
Mm-hmm. All right, I need to check that out. So, yeah, I mean, in case you guys haven't guessed out there, we're talking about humanities, and we're going to talk a little bit more later about what we have already done in the lab in terms of creating hybrid creatures of ourselves and other animals. But first, we should probably talk about chimeras, right?
Yes, the chimera. For you Greek mythology junkies, this was, of course, a monster with a lion's head, a goat's body, a dragon's tail. It breathed fire. It was born in Lycia on the southern coast of what's now modern Turkey. And it would sweep down in the evenings, and it would carry off women, children, and livestock. It would litter their bones
Sounds
all over
right.
the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what are you going to do? You got to get a hero to take care of this this monster that's made from different animal parts. So you bring in Bellerophon, and of course, he can't really just walk up there and take care of it. A, he needs a spear, and B, he needs a Pegasus. So I find it amusing that that he defeats a chimera. Mainly by using a chimera, because today the word chimera is often used to refer to any animal that has two or more different sets of genetically distinct cells working together.
Okay, and so again, this will bring me back to movies and Clash of the Titans, right?
Yes, everyone's modern understanding of mythology, of course, based in Clash of the Titans.
Of course, yeah. Right? But of course, we actually do have hybrids in nature, not necessarily like Medusa-like creatures or otherwise.
They're generally not quite that fabulous.
Yeah. Minotaurs, sirens on the banks calling you forth. But we've got dogs and wolves, not that exciting, but they have made it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lions and tigers. Ligers. A mule, which is the progeny of a male donkey and a female horse.
Yeah, you get the value of a donkey, but the size of a horse.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we've seen interspecies love happenings and their products of their love happenings. I don't know why I'm choosing to say it that way, but this is what happens, right?
Well, yeah, they're related enough that they can actually breed with one another and produce these offspring that most of these cases, though, cannot then breed with other animals.
Right.
The mule, for instance, is generally sterile.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we have cross species in the lab, right? Man-made.
Yes.
Three different types here that you'll see. One is called the hybrid, And this is created by breeding across species, and hybrids are generally the result of combining an egg from one species with sperm from another to form a single embryo. Mm-hmm. And hybrids contain recombined genetic material throughout their genome and throughout all the tissues in their body. Okay, so that's important to note. And then there's transgenics. That's the result of gene transfer, and typically transgenics contains transferred or manipulated genes in addition to the host nuclear and mitochondrial DNA. Mm-hmm. One exception may be a transgenic embryo comprised of the entire complement of nuclear DNA from one organism fused with an inoculated egg cell from another. And this will become all sort of crystal clear when we talk more specifically about what's being created here. And then third, chimeras, right?
Right. And there are a number of cool lab-grown examples of this. Chinese researchers at the Shanghai Second Medical University successfully fused human cells with rabbit eggs. A year later, there was a successful Chinese chimera experiment where researchers at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota announced that they created a pig with human blood pumping through its veins. Mm-hmm. We made a sheep with human livers, a mouse with a human liver, a stapler with a human liver. A calyx with
sure
human cells.
Just making sure you're listening there.
Yeah. Cat-human hybrid proteins, mouse with a human brain, with 1% of its brain was human brain cells. So before anyone gets any crazy secret NIM ideas there. But, it's a technology that's been around the block a few times already. And these are all, I should point, that people are not just making, like, sheep with human livers just
for fun.
They think it's awesome, or they want a sheep that can really hold its liquor.
Mm-hmm.
This is about figuring out ways to potentially grow new organs for organ transplants for humans to better understand some of these systems. I mean, there are definite medical goals in mind here.
Or trying to understand life-threatening diseases.
Exactly, yeah.
In 2007, British researchers created a human-pig hybrid. So this is where the egg comes from a pig and the nucleus comes from a human. And the idea is to implant the nucleus of an egg from a human being with a disease, something like heart disease. And then you can watch how the DNA from a person with this condition instructs cellular development in its earliest stages. And so scientists really hope to find out more about the inner workings about what's going on there, specifically with heart disease. So, there's all these different examples of how we have tinkered with nature in order to observe our maladies or even just how we have progressed as human beings.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Is getting gas at Shell burning a hole in your wallet? What if I told you can easily earn cash back while you fill up? Introducing Drop, the app that turns every fill up into a reward. With Drop, you'll earn points to get free gift cards every time you fill up your tank. Download Drop and use code DROP88 to instantly receive $5 in points to jumpstart your savings journey. Don't miss out on turning your gas expenses into something rewarding.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So all of this leads inevitably to the tale of a Russian biologist by the name of Ilya Ivanov, who was doing most of his work in the 1920s and really wasn't all that heard about by the modern public until around 1990. And that's when a number of Soviet documents became unclassified. The British tabloid The Sun got a hold of some of this, and they started running stories about the Red Frankenstein, who was supposedly had traveled to French Guiana on a Bolshevik-sponsored quest to breed a human-ape hybrid to create some sort of super mutant to aid Stalin in his conquest of the world.
Yeah, right. This was the Red Ape Man Army that they talked about, which, you know, it's probably good to note that Ivanov was working way before the Russian Revolution began. And there are certain aspects of this story that you can see that might have been taken out of context. And and it's a great fun idea to run with this half man, half ape army that Stalin wanted to defeat the world with. But that is not, in fact, what happened, right? That's not exactly what Ivanov was after.
Yeah, at the dawn of the 20th century, Ivanov was already a pretty famous dude in his field for his pioneering work in artificial insemination.
Mm-hmm. Well-respected, too.
Yeah, well-respected. He had done things like he created a Z-donk, which was a zebra-donkey hybrid, a Zubron, which was a European bison-cow crossover. You know, he was creating mashups with animals. So, and kind of, you know, Island of Dr. Moreau-ish, I guess, if you want to really take it and run with it. But he was well thought of, and his next big thing was he wanted to see about improving the blood stock of Imperial Russia. So around 1924, he puts in proposals to the government. Despite the disapproval of the scientific establishment, he got the go-ahead and the funds, most importantly, to mount an expedition to Africa to collect apes so that he could see about creating a hybrid between a human and its closest relative.
That's right. And he was getting his funds from the Soviet Academy of Sciences in part. And there was a lot of crossover at the time. So he's working with a lot of people who are really respected in their fields. Of course, you know, the problem was that it's a little bit diabolical, right? I mean, his idea here.
Yeah, as best we can tell, his real idea, his notion here was not to create a super soldier or anything stupid like that. But he was a big believer in the theories of Darwin, that the idea that man evolved from these previous forms, that evolution was the driving force, natural selection was the driving
force. Which is all great, right?
Yeah, but he thought that the way to really prove it, to just really just settle the case once and for all on the whole evolution versus everything else, versus religion, you name it, was to actually create a human-chimp hybrid and then introduce it to the world. And then people would say, he would be like, what? What's that? You got something something about religion? Meet my humanity. His name is Oliver. And
proof.
Yeah, your entire argument is nil at this point. So he had, you could say he had a noble, scientific goal in mind, if kind of still kind of a heelish move. He's kind of, he wants to stick it to everyone, but still he has a definite goal in mind here. His means of pulling it off are just a little suspect.
Well, yes, in the execution, right? So he decides that, he's going to try to inseminate three females, right? Which he does, or he tries, I should say. And these are African women. And but then, you know, eventually he's forced to abandon the project because it's just not going that well. It doesn't have a ton of support behind it, right? And he has really had to try to get those $10,000 from the Soviet Financial Commission. He's really had to work very hard at it. This is not something that a lot of people want to
find. Right, and it was kind of touch and go. Like, he went to Paris first, and then he went to French Guiana because they had some chimps over there. But then they weren't yet old enough to breed, so he had to come back to Paris.
Nothing was working in his favor.
Right, yeah.
And he gets really desperate. And so what does he do? Something completely unconscionable. He decides that he's going to inseminate African women with the chimpanzee sperm without their knowledge. Okay, so he's trying to get forward with this as much as possible. And he's found out. And, of course, everybody sort of rejects this plan. And he spirals out of his professional field, I guess you could say.
Yeah, he starts hanging out with celebrated surgeon Sergei Voronoff, who at the time was really in fashion because he had a quote-unquote rejuvenation therapy that he would perform, in which he would graft slices of ape testes onto those of rich and aging men who were hoping to regain some of their former vigor.
And let's just all pause there for a moment, think about that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, on one hand, anyone who's ever read The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes is probably thinking of the Adventure of the Creeping Man from 1923, which follows the same logic, the idea that you have somebody that's taking some sort of ape or monkey-related product, but in this case it's changing him and making him crazy, or possibly changing him into a monster. It's one of the more sci-fi of the Sherlock Holmes tales. It's important to keep in mind that Voronoff is not the only one doing this in the 20s.
This rejuvenation testes on your cheek therapy?
Yes, yes. He became notorious for performing it in Algeria. But at the same time, several U.S. surgeons were doing the same thing. There was Dr. Victor D. Lespinasses, a professor of genitourinary surgery at Northwestern University. He was treating impotence with the use of glandular extracts and then grafting slices of human cadaver testes into the rectus muscles of impotent men. Mm. He was just human cadaver to human, so there wasn't anything fishy going on. And certainly we do a lot of today with a lot of transplant of an organ is a cadaver to human transplant.
Right.
So I don't want to scandalize that too much. But then you had this guy, Dr. Leo Stanley, who between 1919 and 1922, he injected 656 prisoners at San Quentin Prison with testes in an attempt to slow or reverse aging. But he used the testicles of goats, rams, boars, deer. He essentially pureed them, I assume, in a big smoothie blender, pureed the testicles so that he could put them in a needle and inject them under the skin of the abdomen.
Subcutaneous testes is what I'm hearing.
Testy like Slurpee. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And of course, there's not much you can really say about that. But he reported that he had some success with it. But ultimately, you have a situation where a dude is performing horrible human experimentation within the walls of a prison. But back to Ivanov, all right?
But I do think it's interesting to note that was the environment that Ivanov was working in.
So. Yeah, he's working in an environment where, and certainly not everybody thought that Ivanov was great. There were some scientists that came to sort of investigate and poke around what he was doing, because everyone was like, yeah, totally inject some people with ape stuff. That's a great idea. Now, some people were concerned, but there was enough of it going around that not as many eyebrows were raised. These were all hormonal approaches to treating impotence made prior to the discovery of testosterone, before the emergence of modern hormone science. So you cut them a little slack there, I guess.
Yeah.
As far as the mindset goes, not as much as some of the actual acts that were performed, because certainly the stuff that happened at San Quentin was indefensible.
Yeah, and, I mean, Ivanov sort of did get his comeuppance, I guess you could say, for his ethical transgressions, right, with trying to impregnate women with chimpanzee sperm without their knowledge. He was banished to Kazakhstan, right?
Yeah, the French governor in Guyana said, none of that, get out of here. Yeah, and then he had plans to carry out more experiments in Russia. But it was a pain to try and ship all these animals back all the way from Africa. They're dying on the way. They're dying once they get back. It's just a huge zoological headache. And yeah, indeed, he eventually is sent to Kazakhstan. And he's released the next year, but he dies soon after. Which, I mean, on one hand, yeah, it's sad, but then also, he was kind of off the rails at that point.
Yeah.
It seems like in any case that we've looked at, there comes this moment where you look up, you're essentially a mad scientist. But you look up and you realize that you would realize you've become a mad scientist. Like whether you're Ivanov and you look up and you realize, wow, I've lost all my funding and I have notes here on how I'm going to secretly impregnate a woman with chimp semen. Or you're someone like Lily, the dolphin guy, and you're living in a flooded apartment with dolphins and taking LSD in your isolation chamber.
Yeah.
You think you might realize, man, my funding was just cut. And I'm doing all this crazy stuff. Maybe I'm not on the up and up anymore. Maybe I've become the bad guy.
Yeah.
Here.
Well, isn't there some sort of phrase about when you're living in the monkey house, you can't smell the poo?
I've never heard that, but that sounds basically here. He was literally living in the monkey house.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not literally, but he was trying to keep a monkey house in Russia and carry out these experiments.
So then that, of course, leads us to the question, could it actually be done? And we will talk about that right after this message.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Tired of wandering the aisles at Walgreens trying to find the best deals? Well, we've got something that'll make your shopping experience a whole lot sweeter. Introducing Drop, the app that rewards you with free gift cards just for doing your everyday shopping. Whether it's groceries, toiletries, or your favorite snacks. With Drop, every purchase earns you points towards fantastic rewards. Download the Drop app now. Use code DROP55 when you sign up to get $5 in points.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. To crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker? It's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
All right, we're back. One more thing about Ivanov before we move on. There, we mentioned that his whole thing was to prove Darwin right, to stomp out religion, and that the Humanzi would be the icon of this victory. But there are also some theories that the aging Bolsheviks in particular were very interested in financing his research because they were aging men in an age when there were some scientific minds that were, that thought that you could slow or reverse aging, by injecting, things like pureed testes into the body. You know, they thought that this was, if these techniques weren't working, they were at least leading to, in the right direction. So there are some theories that state that while Ivanov was definitely, go Darwin, we're going to prove religion wrong, some of the Bolsheviks might be thinking, oh, let's give this guy some money, maybe he'll hook me up with the sweet injections and I can live forever.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So they had their own little hidden agenda.
Maybe, you know.
Right.
It's
but again, Ivanov, you know, not under the direction of Stalin to raise this 8-man army. So could we do it? Could we?
Well, this is kind of an open question. Because this was this period we're talking about, like the 1920s, you know, the early 20th century. This was the time to get funding for this experiment. And certainly some people managed to get, or at least one man managed to get some funding, and it didn't come to fruition. So the environment in the world today is certainly not such, certainly in most places, thankfully, that this kind of thing is going to get greenlit.
Yeah, that's right. Robin Bernstein, the assistant professor of anthropology at George Washington University, says that in a lab setting with a scientist, it's possible to fertilize an egg with genetic material from a chimp. But to your point, she says, who's going to fund it? Who's going to sanction it?
Yeah, and you're going to have to, I mean, you know, let's not kid ourselves. As a scientist, I tend to be pretty bright people, but they are existing in a, and they're also existing in a culture of their particular science. So you would have to have someone in a culture that advocated or tolerated this type of experiment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been people often point to the Second World War and the experiments of Joseph Mengele. You know, and they the horrible things that went on there under the Nazi regime because it was a situation where stuff was tolerated. You release a gas in a room and it will eventually fill that volume of air. You know, you have to have the space that will tolerate a certain level of unethical science, mm-hmm. or you know, outright evil, however you want to phrase it. So yeah, for this kind of experiment to come around again, for someone to actually make a go at it, you would have to have that environment, that culture that tolerated this kind of scientific experimentation among actual scientists.
Well, and even though, you know, the scientific community is largely pretty self-governing, there are people who are still worried about it. Biotech activist Jeremy Rifkin said in a 2000 interview with The Guardian, chimps shared 98% of the human genome, and a fully mature chimp has the equivalent mental abilities and consciousness of a 4-year-old human. Fusing human and chimpanzee embryo, which researchers say is feasible, this is him saying this, mm-hmm. could produce a creature so human that questions regarding its moral and legal status would throw 4,000 years of ethics into chaos. Would such a creature enjoy human rights? Would it have to pass some kind of humanness test to win its freedom? Would it be forced into doing menial labor or be used to perform dangerous activities?
Well, it's interesting. I was reading some stuff by Richard Dawkins, and he was making pretty much the same argument that if we were, he was laying out some various situations that could come about that would change the way we think about things. And he was arguing that if you were able to create a successful hybridization of a human and a chimpanzee, this humanzee, you would basically change everything. That, like, his argument is kind of like Ivanov's,
mm-hmm.
that if you had this creature, except he's not advocating the creation of it, but he's saying, could it be done? Maybe. And if it were done, it would change the way we think. We were talking about this earlier. I don't know if we actually agree with that.
Right, because we were actually pointing to our podcast about the science of arguing and how sometimes even when we have all the facts before us, sometimes, and mostly this is ego-driven usually, we tend to ignore those facts and still go with whatever it is that we're rooting for, we're arguing against.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's possible that it wouldn't necessarily change our idea of how the world was made, how we came into being, if we were to create this creature.
Right.
For,
like,
some people it would, right?
Right. I mean, but someone who firmly believes in intelligent design, they're very much set in this mindset that this is the right way and the rest is just some sort of, like, liberal agenda. If said liberals were to roll out humanzee, it's not like they would drop everything and be like, well, what have I been wasting my time with this whole intelligent design stuff, because there is the proof, the humanzee.
Right, right.
They would say, no, that's just some weird monkey you found. Or any number of ideas that would just refute any possibility that this is what they said it was.
Right. And, you know, just in case anybody's worried about this coming to fruition, in 1997, Stuart Newman, a developmental biologist sponsored by, of course, the biotech activist Jeremy Rifkin, actually sought to preclude the creation of a humanzee by attempting to patent the relevant technology so that they would be able to restrict its use and then promote an ethics debate,
mm-hmm.
You know, on a worldwide platform. Because they felt like, we just want to go ahead and bring this issue to the forefront because people really aren't thinking about it. Even though the patent was rejected, they felt like it was successful because now they had people talking about it.
Yeah, they raised the question about it. People were discussing the possibilities and the ethics of creating said hybrid.
Yeah, and so, I mean, in a sense, the government reacted the way it was supposed to, right? Because it's not really supposed to give a patent to anybody, you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily know someone's agenda, right?
Right.
So they rejected this patent on the grounds that although the Patent and Trademark Office has been permitted since a Supreme Court decision in 1980 to issue patents on living organisms, a major ground for the rejection was their claim to have no guidance from Congress as to how human an organism can be before it is not patentable by the 13th Amendment's prohibition of slavery. So, you know, there's it's still very much a gray area. And as Rifkin had brought up, you know, at what point are we human? What is humanness? What is, you know, what are we creating here? It's possible to create this creature, but should we?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying yes, we should create it. I'm just saying, yeah, that's all good stuff to think about. It also brings to mind another tale from this same sort of legacy I was discussing earlier with The Adventures of the Creeping Man and Island of Dr. Moreau. You had an H.P. Lovecraft story in 1920 titled Facts Concerning the Late Author German and His Family, which is one that I always liked when I was reading Lovecraft. But it's ultimately, it sort of brings to mind some of Lovecraft's racial paranoia, which can at times be a little off-putting. But what's amazing about this story, it's very much just set in this post-Darwinian world. So this story involves a man who came back from exploring in Africa. And it comes to light that while he was there, he fell in love with a white ape princess. Think the movie Congo, the crazy gray apes that had the big stone paddles that mm-hmm. they bash people with. Well, individual finds out that that a member of his family had gone to Africa, fallen in love, and that he was actually descended partially from this white ape princess. So I just find that a fascinating tale because it really brings to mind a lot of the problems that would come to light if we had a humanity, the idea that it would really rock our boat and make us think long and hard about these differences between what it is to be human mm-hmm. and what it is to be this other, and if there is, and how firm that distinction really is. Of course, in the Lovecraft story, it's just a little more horrific.
Well, and to bring up Richard Dawkins, right, the selfish gene, he talks about how our genes are selfish. If all of a sudden you do have genetic material that is created with a chimpanzee and you have that offspring, how do you feel toward that, right? Mm-hmm. Because that is part of you, right?
Yeah.
You have a completely different idea of what it is to be human, to be sentient.
All right, well, I think that about wraps it up. Let's have the robot bring over some mail, and we'll read a quick one. All right, this is from a listener by the name of Tony. It says, hi, Robert and Julie. Greetings from Melbourne, Australia. Really enjoy your podcast. I was listening to your bug diet episode today while on my way to meet some friends for lunch in our Chinatown district when I happened to pass a restaurant called Ant's Bistro, and that's spelled A-N-T. I had to take a photo and send it to you guys. I'm yet to sample their signature dish, but it's a concept you could catch on. Here's the photo. Keep up the great work. So, we asked people for examples of bug-related cuisine in their own experiences, and we had a few different people write in, and that was one of them. And let's see what else we have here. We heard from a listener by the name of Timothy. Hi, Robert and Julie. Just wanted to weigh in on the arguments episode. Robert had mentioned philosophy, and I wanted to stress how important it really is and how sad it is that philosophy isn't taken more seriously in American society. Ego is like a colored lens we may not even be aware we are wearing. The argument is a fantastic opportunity for someone else to point them out. Philosophy helps you learn to look for those errors yourself. I believe philosophy is a large part of why my girlfriend and I are able to turn our occasional argument into meaningful conversation. We are both willing to be wrong because we both find the rational solution we agree upon to be much preferable to a selfish win. Love the show. And for the record, Julie, the male robot most definitely is not argumentative.
Oh,
smiley face.
Oh, you say that, but have you ever been stuck in the break room with Arnie? No.
Well,
it's pretty heated in there.
He's in there to talk to the robotic coffee machine.
Yeah,
I think they have a thing going.
Yeah.
Well, all right, if you have something you want to share with us about a past episode on bugs or arguing, or if you have some interesting stuff to share about this episode on humanities, do let us know. There were a number of... I had other things in the notes I didn't get around to mentioning, so I'm sure some of you guys have some cool works of fiction to bring up, and I'd love to... highlight them and or be exposed to them for the first time. And if you want to find us, you can find us A, on Facebook, where we're Stuff to Blow Your Mind. You can find us B, on Twitter, where we're Blow the Mind. And C, where else can you find us?
You can find us at Blow the Mind at Discovery And take note of that new email address, please, discovery.com. Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Thinking of popping the question? Diamonds Direct has an offer you can't miss. This month only, buy a natural diamond engagement ring of 1 carat plus and receive a free natural 1 carat diamond tennis bracelet valued at $2,000. Imagine giving her the ring of her dreams and her wedding gift all at once. No one provides education, selection, and value like Diamonds Direct. Your chance to get a free tennis bracelet from your friends at Diamonds Direct won't last long. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Is getting gas at Exxon burning a hole in your wallet? Get the Drop app. With Drop, you can earn free gift cards just by filling up your tank. Download Drop now. Use code DROP66 to instantly receive $5 in points.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those, too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.